harm's way, and out again, usually leaking blood. God knows how many wounds he'd taken. Once, I recall, he'd had his field glasses shot out of his hand, 3 bullet holes in his coat and a slug through his foot. He probably clicked his tongue and frowned that time. Not surprisingly, he was as often sick as well. He'd been in a shocking state, they say, when he licked Tantia Topi in the mutiny. And according to Colin Campbell, there had been no to a pun of him hanging straight when he'd planned the capture of Lucknow. That means he wasn't at all well, by the way. When he wasn't being all heroic, chasing Sikhs with elephant guns and hammering Pathans on the border, he'd laid half the canals and most of the roads in northern India, from Lahore to the Khyber, and built Darjeeling. Now, on the brink of retirement and pension, they'd handed him the poisoned chalice of Abyssinia. And here he was, welcoming me with that famous smile which everyone remembered, perhaps because it was so out of keeping with the stern old-fashioned figurehead, asking about my doings, remarking how well I looked, inquiring after Elspeth, whom he'd never met, drumming up sandwiches and beer for my refreshment, observing again what luck it was my turning up like this, and how glad they were of the Maria Theresa's. Dashed unnerving. So much cordiality from a man who'd never been one of your hearties. In a generation of great captains like Campbell and Rose and Outram, such giants as the Lawrences and Nicholson and Havelock and Harry Smith, to say nothing of fighting madmen like Hope Grant and Rake Hodgson, Napier had always been the modest, quiet man on the edge of the party, only occasionally showing a flash of sardonic humour, but always happy to escape to his work and his studies, music and painting and peering at rocks. Since he'd mentioned the dollars, I reminded him tactfully that I'd been homeward bound when I'd allowed Speedy Cut to press me into the service, and hinted politely that I'd be obliged for a warrant and a trifle of journey money to see me on my way again.
"See to that more, if you please," says he to the sapper whom he'd introduced as his secretary and interpreter. "By the way, how many languages do you have, Moore?
A dozen?
How does that compare with your store, Sir Harry?"
He'd been on the brink of calling me Flashman. Being my senior by 10 years and now a general, mere Harry would have been beyond him altogether these days, and I made a note not to address him by the old familiar Bob. I said I might scratch by in a dozen, but wasn't fluent in more than 6.
"One of them being Arabic, I seem to remember," says Napier, which set me worrying.
Why Arabic? He didn't enlarge, but dismissed Moore and my escort and settled back in his chair, motioning Speedy to take a seat by the table.
"Well, this is quite splendid, Sir Harry. I gather from Vienna's message that you've been in Mexico lately. Political indaba, was it?"
"Not exactly, sir. Foreign enlistment, you might say."
"I see. So, you have no official position just now? On the retired list?"
He nodded.
"Well, Moore will have your warrant ready in the morning, if you want to use it immediately, that is."
He glanced at Speedy, and Speedy, sitting there in his barbarous finery like the king of the Cannibal Islands, smiled ever so roguish, as though he were in on some jolly secret.
"I don't follow, sir. Why shouldn't I use it?"
"No reason at all," says Napier, "except that, knowing your knack for adventurous service, shall I call it, it had occurred to me that you might care to postpone your departure in a good cause after your own heart?"
He ended on a question, and Speedy chuckled, damn him, watching me with the idiot grin of one waiting to see a glad surprise sprung.
"It is an altogether unofficial thing, and indeed must be strictly secret."
Napier sat forward, instinctively lowering his voice.
"You are entirely strange in the country, Sir Harry, and care has been taken that no Highland Abyssinian should lay eyes on you, and that your presence here is unknown to all but a few of our own people who can be relied upon. You see, there is a part to be played, a secret and, it may well be, a perilous part, and one that no other man in the army could even attempt to play."
He paused, his hooded eyes on mine.